It's intermission for the fourth and final broadcast in this series of Philadelphia Youth Orchestra performances. And our guest is Maestro Louis Scaglione. Welcome.
Thank you, Kevin.
And it's a special concert for you. It's an anniversary of sorts, isn't it?
Yes, it was the occasion of my 20th anniversary with the Philadelphia Youth Orchestra. So this was back on June 4th of 2017 in Verizon Hall. And so this was a very special performance for me.
And it's a special performance for me, especially the work we heard by Alan Macwell, because as a child, I read to my son all of the Tintin books. So this is a delightful piece for me. What can you tell us about this one?
Well, this was our first ever Young Composers Competition, and Alan Macwell, Young Composer, was the winner. The Young Composer Competition, as we established it in 2017, recognizes and honors the talents of young composers between the ages of 19 and 23. So basically college-age years composers. And the competition is an opportunity to encourage young composers to develop their most valued skills and teach PYO orchestra students the value of supporting new orchestra works as well as the experience of exploring and performing new music. Sheridan Zayfried, one of our alumni and also graduate of the Curtis Institute of Music, a young composer, he came to me and back then and said, would you like to start a young composers competition? It was the year before my 20th anniversary, and I thought, well, given this milestone in my career, what better way to help celebrate that than by to institute this new program of the PYO and encourage and support the work of young composers. So with this in mind, we launched the program. I think in the first year, we received over 60 scores from around the world. And Sheridan had the daunting task of going through them. I said, Sheridan, as long as you run the program and manage it and then deliver to me a short list of 10 works that you think make the cut, then we together will choose the final, the top three. So we always have a winner, a second place winner, and a third place winner, with the winner receiving the world premiere of their work with the orchestra, a very large, nice cash prize, as well as being featured in the WRTI broadcast. So Alan Macwell, of New Zealander and American descent, began really his career, as he says, in third grade through piano lessons. At the time, he was a student pursuing a bachelor's of music and music composition at the Boston Conservatory of Music. I have not followed his career, so I'm assuming that at this juncture he has graduated and is well on his way to being a brilliant young composer and doing a lot of great work in the field of music composition. I know he had great interest in these comic books, and so he wrote this piece, Secretly Ramses II. It sounds like a little bit of a journey, right? When we listen to the piece, has a Hollywood movie type flair to it. I thought it was a really well constructed work, and that's why we chose it and we chose to perform it. The process of bringing Alan Macwell in, we brought him in early on in the rehearsal process to work with the orchestra and to listen to their own work, his work. Often young composers don't have access to a full orchestra like PYO in which to try out their writings and what they're thinking about through composition. So this was a learning process for him to hear his work with a full symphony orchestra for the first time and then to work through with Sheridan Zayfried as a mentor. Sheridan would give coaching lessons and help further develop the piece from the first reading to the time we perform it. So it was a process that evolved from the first reading to the time of performance, and We often would engage the students and get their feedback on the work, which is often critical for a young composer to hear feedback from those who he's asking to play the piece. You know, you get a lot of interesting input, and it helps refine this piece of art and bring it to life. So it was an interesting process, and we continued it up until this year. This current season, we suspended the Young Composers Competition in favor of actually commissioning Sheridan Seyfried to write a new work, which we would have premiered on upcoming on June 7th. But our plans for that premiere and the PYO's 80th anniversary came to a shorter conclusion than we had liked. And so I will premiere the new piece by Sheridan Seyfried next season, since it's already done. But anyway, we have lots to look forward to. But that was the background on the Young Composers Competition.
And now the other piece in the first part of the concert that we heard, the Glazunov. How does that balance against a young composer and an established Russian figure?
Sure. With this particular concert, as I said, was a bit self-indulging with programming Carmina Burana, a work that I really have enjoyed for most of my professional career. I really loved the piece, actually. Thought it was would be an opportune time to program it. But I went also and I thought about the many collaborators I've had, soloists I've had the pleasure and privilege of working with, and Michael Ludwig always comes first to mind. I've known Michael for the better part of 25 or so years now, and met him when he was associate concertmaster in the Philadelphia Orchestra many, many years ago. He and I have collaborated many times over the last years, and we've on WRTI on these broadcasts, we have heard him perform different works with the PYO in the past. So with this 20th anniversary year of mine, I thought, well, let me see if Mike would be willing to collaborate again, and he was delighted to do so. And with Michael having been through so many different concerti together, I had asked him what he wanted to perform, and he had said, let's do the Alexander Glazunov, and I was delighted to do it. It's a work that I had not done prior, had not conducted or taught prior to this performance, so it was a wonderful opportunity to work with my dear friend again and bring this piece of music to the concert stage and share with the Philadelphia Youth Orchestra. I enjoy working with Michael quite a bit. He's someone who I've gotten to know over the years musically, and when we're on stage together, he's very easy for me to follow. So the role of the conductor is to follow the soloists and then get the orchestra to follow you so that you have this connection and you have this cohesion between soloists and orchestra, and the conductor tends to be the conduit between the two. And so some soloists are easy to follow, and some soloists not so easy to follow. But Michael is one of those soloists that I can follow very well. As a former retired pianist and accompanist, one of the art forms that one has to learn as a pianist is how to accompany, because it's so much part of our routine and work. And so I consider myself to be always been a good accompanist, not so great pianist, but a good accompanist. And so Michael is easy for me to follow because I understand how he breathes, how he phrases, how he works his way through a piece. Typically, I have to, if I rehearse once with him, I get a real sense of how he wants to perform the piece. So it makes it very enjoyable for me. And then through that, I can teach the students a great deal about how to, as an orchestra, accompany a great soloist like Mr. Ludwig.
I would imagine that the instrument plays a part, whether it's a violinist or a pianist or a flutist, how the orchestra adapts and how you adapt to the soloist.
Yes, every instrument has its limitations as far as volume and how much sound the instrument can produce. If you're accompanying an organ concerto like we heard last week with the Barber Toccata Festiva, there's no issue with hearing the organ. And in fact, you have to be careful that the organ doesn't overpower the orchestra, which it can do. But with the violinist and the violin, you have one violin pitted against, you know, the two violin sections and the entire string section of the Philadelphia Youth Orchestra. So although Michael has a wonderful way of projecting his sound, and he gets his instrument is quite a fine instrument, and the way he can project into the hall and fill up a hall with his sound, it's still different than, say, dealing with an organist and then, you know, pianists that I've worked with. What I try to do is basically position myself on the podium so I can see, in this case, the violinist's bow arm. So as his bow is going up and down over the course of the instrument, I try to pay attention to that because it gives me a lot of information that I can then translate to the orchestra. Likewise, with the pianist, I try to position the piano in such a way that I can, when I glance over to my left, I can see the pianist's hands. It's very important for me to be able to see that and see how they're going about and working about the keyboard. It helps, again, me interpret what they're doing and really communicate that to the orchestra in order to help everything stay cohesively together. But working with Michael, it comes easy when I work with him.
The second half of the program is a work that is near and dear to you as well, the Carmina Burana.
I've always wanted to program this piece. I've done, prior to doing this performance, I did shorter, smaller orchestration, but there's a version you can do with two pianos and percussion, basically. And I've done that version, but I've never done it with full orchestra. So this was an opportunity that I couldn't pass up. And having worked with the Mendelssohn Club chorus in years past on a couple other projects, they were the ones I approached to do this, and of course they sang so very well. They're such a wonderful chorus and choral institution, and one of the oldest, you know, if not the oldest in the country. So I approached Paul Reardon, who was their director at the time, artistic director at the time, and he was delighted to collaborate. I then went to my friends at the Academy of Vocal Arts and asked if they had any soloists that would be willing to do this. All three solo parts, the soprano, the tenor, and the baritone, are very, very difficult parts to sing. It requires great technical facility of all three vocal soloists to be able to manage. And of particular note is the tenor. The tenor has to sing one movement, as we'll hear, which is a reference during the tavern scene in the second part of a goose roasting on the spit. And he plays the role of the goose. And it's very high, extraordinarily, almost excruciatingly high for the tenor to sing. And you need a very special voice, tenor voice, in order to pull this off. In addition, you have the baritone, and the range of the baritone is also quite wide. The baritone has to have a great power and direction in his voice, but also a level of tenderness and use of, at times, falsetto mixed in with the full voice in order to achieve the musical and portray the text that the singer has to do. And the soprano just has to sing beautifully and lyrically in the third part about love, all about love in the third part. So we had two wonderful soloists from the Academy of Vocal Arts in Alexandra Nowakowski and John Viscardi, both of whom have since graduated from the Academy of Vocal Arts. And then I had a reference to another singer who was at the time teaching at Westminster Choir College, Ian Eric Rieger, and Professor Rieger, I thought, sang the role very well. Again, he had done it many times, and we needed a particular tenor voice to do it effectively and to do it musically well. And Dr. Rieger was the one to whom I was referred, and he was very gracious to come down and join us for the performance. So pulling all that together, in addition with the Philadelphia Boys Choir, our cherubs in the piece, it was great fun for me to teach a work like this, multi-movement piece, and teaching the different sections and the use of orchestration, the colors of the orchestra that Orff brings about. It really makes it a very enjoyable piece to teach. Of course, you have to be careful at certain times because some of the text gets a little racy. The piece has all the trademarks that the public would come to really want and know in anything of entertainment: drinking, gambling, sex, and love. So, you know, how you go about teaching that to students as I'm teaching the orchestra parts, right, as we're rehearsing, we don't have the chorus there, we don't have the soloist there, but there's still, there. You have to teach the orchestra based on the text that ultimately will have to be put into this mix through the chorus and through the soloist. And so the music and the colors of the music are inspired by the text. And there's certain lines in this piece that you have to very gently address in order to get the right musical concepts to come to life and bring the whole piece to life in order to support the text and support the additional music that we'll layer in when we get to the dress rehearsal point. All to say, it was great fun. You can hear the orchestra's exuberance in this performance, and I think everybody at the end of the concert really did a magnificent job with putting this whole program together.
And since this is the final program in the series, and we don't know what's going to happen in the months ahead, maybe you could talk a little bit about what you see happening for the Philadelphia Youth Orchestra.
Well, we are currently taking auditions. We had to move our auditions to an online platform. We typically hear up to 300 young people every spring during our general audition process. This year, we had to suspend the in-person auditions and had to create a online platform for which auditions to be through which auditions are submitted by students. So we are currently taking applications for next year for all of our performing divisions, and you can find that on our website. We are fully planning to begin next season. We are in the middle of planning the full season, our 81st season, and all of our program divisions will be running and on schedule. We certainly hope that by September, the world will be in a place where we can return to the rehearsal room and the concert hall and start our season and have a full and robust season of programming as we have always done throughout our 80 years. Absent of that, we will certainly have Plan B, where if we have to have a delayed start to the season a few weeks later into October, then we will begin programming online. We've developed so much program through our online formats and platforms over the last 8 weeks since we've been shuttered in place, that we are going to take the best practices from what we've learned through our online teaching now and apply them to future use. Of course, what we do is really demanded of music is so much is that in-person, interpersonal connection. And it's hard to manufacture that through online platforms, but we're doing the best we can, as everybody are doing. You know, I know so many of my colleagues are teaching online, have had to teach and make the transition to teaching online. It's not been easy for many of us, myself included, when you're not used to using this format to teach, having to quickly learn it and to do so in a very short amount of time. At first was daunting for me until I got more comfortable. And now I'm doing a lot more of online teaching with the Philadelphia Youth Orchestra and have developed some interesting seminars that I'm teaching online about music history and conducting and composer surveys of different, like Beethoven symphonies. We're studying Beethoven symphonies. So we're doing the best we can to adapt to unusual and unprecedented times, but my outlook is very optimistic. I know that we will get back to the rehearsal room and the concert hall soon, and we're prepared for anything, but we certainly expect to begin in September, and we are going to march forward under that premise.
And of course, you'll always have your radio home here at WRTI. And we'll see you again in the fall for the next series of broadcasts.
Thank you very much, Kevin. And I would like to express my sincerest gratitude to WRTI, to all of our friends at WRTI who work tirelessly around the clock to bring us great classical and jazz all day long, all night long, and especially during these very trying and difficult times. I've listened to the radio constantly, and I'm always encouraged by the many of your listening audience that write into the station to say how important this wonderful music is and how much of a salvation this music is to them. And that couldn't be further from the truth. So what you do is so very, very important, especially during these times. And we thank all of our friends at WRTI, and we also thank our great listening audience of WRTI for their support and encouragement through this whole crisis. So thank you very much.
And the best of luck to you and to the Philadelphia Youth Orchestra. Maestro Louis Scaglione, thanks again for being our guest.
Thank you.